This is Saturday Night on The Circle on 93 WIPC.
Welcome back, Indianapolis, to another edition of Saturday Night on The Circle, where things are looking quite grim in the war across the ocean with Israel and Hamas. Thousands have died since the terror attack that killed more than 1,300 people, many innocent civilians, women, children, just a week ago. And now the administration has been caught with their pants down for the second time in as many years, 2 years, Americans stranded overseas seeking escape, and the administration without a clue as where to begin. Absolutely disgusting. We're going to get into the details of that and how John Kirby is insulting the Americans trying to escape. But first, we got to get to the really important stuff here. Why is the camera broken, Carl? Last week we had a problem with the camera, and now both of them are gone.
You know, these,
what's up with this?
These weekday people, they mess up the cameras and then they don't put it back.
They're
the
abusive
way it,
to the equipment is what they
yeah.
are.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't believe how rough these weekday hosts can be with just some cords and some cameras. They're behind the computers. What are you doing? Like, just to describe to our listeners, since they can't see it on the camera, the way that the studio is arranged, there's kind of this void in between where the microphones are, and that's where all the cables and things go. So who is messing around in the center void of the desk and then screwing with the cables to mess up the... Where's the engineering department?
I think it might be Rob Kendall.
Yes.
So he can yell at us Monday.
We're gonna blame Rob Kendall, as is the custom. Anyway, we're going to move forward, and thanks for tuning in to the traditional terrestrial airwaves. Are we running the YouTube feed so people can hop in the comments, or is that just...
No. What's the point? Because then they're going to troll us in the chat room. Where's the camera?
Yeah, they're just going to make fun of us. Well, they're going to make fun of us anyway. At least we don't have to see it on the comments feed. Okay, anyway, disaster... In Israel, tragedy as thousands have died, 1,300 men, women, children, young babies decapitated, horrors, too disturbing to describe on the air that many have witnessed, and we'll play just a brief description of that here in a minute. But first, the administration official, John Kirby, he is insulting the Americans who are trapped overseas in Israel seeking escape. His solution, just go buy a commercial flight.
I want to start with the efforts to get Americans out of Israel right now. I think Senator Josh Hawley sort of summed it up, what many people are asking. Here's a social media post he put out. He said, quote, "For the second time in 2 years, Americans are stranded in a war zone. What's the plan to get them out?" How can you answer that question?
Well, a couple of things here. First of all, commercial flights are still going in and out of Ben Gurion Airport, so that's always an option for those who may want to leave. There are still some viable ground routes. And we're exploring many other options as well to see if there's other things that we could do to help Americans who want to leave. There are many Americans who live and work in Israel. For many of them, it's home, and they don't want to leave.
Oh, my God. Can't even believe that. Okay, so first of all, commercial flights, that's not an option because they've since grounded the flights for commercial airline safety. You got Hamas shooting rockets over there. Not exactly a great time to be flying airplanes. And then second of all, he said ground exit. You want to talk about a ground exit? Where are they going to flee to?
They're going to drive through Gaza.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, that's not going to work either. And so then he says the administration's exploring other options. This is a disgrace. The Americans, they just want to stay there. This is their home. You don't think they want to take a vacation, maybe? Just a little trip While the conflict is going on, oh my, okay, so that, yeah, obviously the administration has no idea what they're doing, not the first clue where to begin. Meanwhile, you have war crimes and human atrocities, harrowing sights to be seen, on the ground descriptions of children with their heads cut off.
It's hard to even explain exactly just the mass casualties that happened right here. In fact, the Israeli military says they still don't have a clear number, but I'm talking to some of the soldiers, and they say what they've witnessed as they've been walking through these different houses, these different communities, babies, their heads cut off. That's what they said. Gunned down, families completely gunned down in their beds. You can see some of these soldiers right now comforting each other. Many of them reserves who jumped into action, leaving their own families behind as well, not knowing the sheer horror that they were about to come to. They say they've never experienced anything like this. This is nothing that anyone could have even imagined.
People burned alive. The report where she was delivering those remarks from was in a neighborhood not unlike any ordinary American suburb, which makes this all the more frightening to imagine the daily stress of these people's lives, with Gaza, I believe she said, less than half a mile away. And then the threat of these terror attacks coming forward. And obviously, retaliatory action is in order. In fact, these remarks were made by Micah Beckwith this Tuesday on the Kendall and Casey show. He's got a solution for the whole problem you see over there in Gaza.
Some people might be saying, oh my gosh, killing, that's not godly. No, it's absolutely very godly. God dealt with evil the same way. You kill it, you put an end to it, and then you can live in peace.
Oh boy, here I go killing again.
Boy, that escalated quickly. I mean, that really got out of hand fast.
It jumped up a notch.
It did, didn't it?
Okay, so to be honest, although I think retaliatory action is definitely in order, I'm not sure the mantra of just keep killing until peace is achieved is necessarily the way to go. That's my opinion. However, I am but a godless atheist, so who am I to question the morality of a gleeful wholesale slaughter endorsed by biblical authority?
Biblical authority?
Yeah, well, that's what he's representing after all. This pastor, Micah Beckwith. So there's the biblical authority there. You know, God just loves killing, which I'm pretty sure is the motto that got us in this whole situation, Micah, because that's what the Islamists are saying as well. They think that it's their God-given right to murder every Jew and overtake the land.
Like, yeah, Allah Akbar, right?
Exactly. Theistic-inspired murder is the entire issue with the region. So, yeah, I mean, obviously, Israel's going to have to deal with Hamas, and they will have to deal with it violently and root them out. Wholesale slaughter, gleeful slaughter. Not sure that should be in the cards. This logic strikes me as the old corporate wisdom. You know, the layoffs will continue until company morale improves. We're just going to keep killing until we achieve peace. Anyway, Rashida Tlaib, of course, also unable to find it within herself, even though she supports the Palestinian state. And I think these two things can be separated. You can support, theoretically, the existence of a Palestinian state and have a two-state solution, but not support the actions of Hamas. That can be an ideological position. I think it would be a poor one, but that can be a position that you have. However, Tlaib can't even bring it within herself to denounce the burning of people alive, the murder of civilians, the beheading of babies, the raping of women. She's silent. It's gross.
Do you condone what Hamas has done, chopping off babies' heads, burning children alive, raping women in the street? You have no comment about children's heads being chopped off? Congressman, why do you have the Palestinian flag outside your office if you do not condone what Hamas terrorists have done to Israel? Do Israeli lives not matter to you?
Don't move. You can't see us if we don't move.
I see nothing. I know nothing.
Okay, so that clip actually went on a lot longer where she was being followed by this reporter down the hallway. And good job for exposing what a gross representative this is. And the Democrats don't know what to do. They're pretending there's party unity here, even though they've been fostering these anti-Semitic representatives within their ranks for quite some time. Steny Hoyer trying to equivocate and saying, she flies a Palestinian flag. I fly a Danish flag.
Should your colleague Rashida Tlaib still have the Palestinian flag outside of her office?
I don't know. She's Palestinian. You know, that doesn't mean she's a terrorist. It doesn't mean that she condones this, Rashida. I fly a Danish flag at my house.
Danish flag, he says.
Are you serious?
Danish flag, he says. Yeah, no, I mean, it's absolutely a joke. And yes, she must absolutely support Hamas since, as you heard, she couldn't find it within herself for more than a minute's time to denounce the wholesale slaughter of innocents. So, when you can't find it within yourself to say that that's bad, that's wrong, I can only assume you must be sympathetic with it in some way, as were individuals gathered on the outside of Monument Circle just earlier. I believe it was Thursday. They had a rally for peace in some more support of Hamas, and we had actual WIBC news on the scene, and they got us audio of the protesters.
People, calm down. Standing out here yelling rabble, rabble, rabble isn't going to help anything.
But we don't know what else to do, Mayor.
Coming up next, Tony Kinna is going to join the program, and he will share with us what he witnessed on The Circle on Thursday while he was co-hosting on the Hammer and Nigel show and then went out to interact with these pro-Palestinian supporters. We'll tell you, coming up next, what he found, so stay tuned.
Thanks to
listening to Saturday Night on The Circle on 93 WIPZ.
Welcome back to Saturday Night on The Circle. I'm Ethan Hatcher, the Bohemian Codger. Find my podcasts uploaded to WIBC.com and SaturdayNightOnTheCircle.fireside.fm. And as always, feel free to jump in the comments while we're streaming live on the YouTube machine. This week, pro-Hamas and pro-Israeli protesters met on the grounds of Monument Circle to show support for their sides in the conflict overseas. One supporting the random murder of civilians and children and brutalization of women, and one the right of Israeli people to exist in peace. Here to give us his eyewitness report from the steps of Monument Circle is the globe-trotting investigative reporter from the Daily Signal, the indefatigably charming Tony Kinnett, joins us on the show once again.
How's it going, man?
It's going very well, my friend. How I understand that you got to see this whole event unfold, so why don't you tell our listeners how what was originally billed as a pro-Palestinian protest ended up unfolding on the steps of Monument Circle?
So all of this starts when the Indiana Liberation Group, that's a very pro-Antifa, pro-BLM group that actually Indy BLM, Black Lives Matter group, stems from, announced that they were going to do this big pro-Palestinian rally. Although the Indy BLM account had not just been pro-Palestine, not pro-two-state solution, but had basically advocated for the ethnic cleansing of Jews, had advocated for pro-Hamas, said that Hamas was completely in the right, that Hamas, it was good, like the BLM group in Chicago, who had suggested that it was good that that paragliders dropped in and massacred at a music festival, a bunch of other atrocities.
Now, you haven't heard a lot of coverage from the mainstream media about advocating for the ethnic cleansing of Jews, so why don't you drill down a little bit? Who were the people advocating for the ethnic cleansing? How was that specifically being vocalized?
So the group advocating for the ethnic cleansing of Jews was Indy Black Lives Matter. And the reason that we know that they are open to the ethnic cleansing of Jews from the region is twofold. Number one, because they use the term violent decolonization. And as many in the Black Lives Matter movement have stated, this decolonization comes with raping, it comes with beheading, it comes with holding hostages, it comes with murdering anyone that lives anywhere near Israel or Gaza. And they state that, you know, as one BLM leader put it, and as several other, actually, scarily enough, like Washington Post columnists put it, what did you think decolonization was going to be? Just like the American Revolution was, like just a letter? These things were justified.
And we know that they're actually being memorialized. I believe it was BLM Chicago sharing the tweet of a silhouetted profile of the paratrooper gliding in with a Palestinian flag representing the people who parasailed into the music festival and murdered civilians. So that's what they are specifically lionizing and heroizing. It's absolutely disgusting. They've drawn a line in the sand, and they've made it very clear who the villains in this situation are. The fact that people, you know, were vocalizing their support for this, I think, is absolutely disturbing.
But that's not the number one piece of evidence that I would provide to suggest that this was a pro-Hamas protest. Number one, there was a guy walking around amidst the group with a Hamas flag on his back. So for those who don't know, the Palestine flag is a red triangle canton with a green, a white, and a red stripe that represents the fictional state of Palestine. Number two, the Hamas flag contains shaped Arabic script a lot like the Saudi Arabian flag, over a white Arabian script over a green background, but without the sword. So there is a saber on the Saudi Arabian flag. There is not on the Hamas flag. I was able to confirm with John Herrick of WIBC, as well as a few other individuals there, that there was a person wearing a pro-Hamas flag. Several protesters on the Palestinian side told me they were very pro-Hamas. When I walked around asking people to condemn some of the actions of Hamas, since they were there to condemn actions from Israel, maybe they would be open to perhaps a libertarian view that both sides are at fault here, that the two-state solution is important. And I was told to F off.
Wow.
And several other things. It was interesting. But the biggest piece of evidence is that they were chanting, "From the river to the sea, Palestine will be free." This is not an innocuous phrase. Since its inception, it was used as an ethnic cleansing phrase. It means that from the river in the several hundred miles inland all the way to the Mediterranean, there will not be one Jew present. That is exactly how that phrase has been used since its inception.
And it's very important. Yeah, I mean, it's very important that this be defined as a pro-Hamas rally when you have people carrying around the flag, not a pro-Palestinian flag, but a pro-Hamas flag, because you have literally the standards of battle. And if people are carrying that flag in, they are confirming which side they support, and they are confirming the brutality and their support of the brutality that Jews have been experiencing in Israel right now.
And by the way, for the people who are out there saying, well, both sides are at fault, well, it's really just a pro-Palestine rally, it's not a pro-Hamas rally. We asked the people at the rally.
Right.
We asked Hamas. We asked the Palestinian leadership. They're very, very open with everyone. They're not hiding it. This isn't like when the left says, well, when they fly the Gadsden flag, the yellow flag with the snake on it, don't tread on me. That's actually a racist dog whistle. No, no, no. There is no connecting of red pieces of yarn in a Hollywood detective movie. That's not what I'm talking about. The people at the rally openly support Hamas. The people at the rally openly call Israel a terrorist state who needs to be killed. The people at the rally openly said, you are not a victim if the individual is oppressed. That is what they were chanting. I have it on my GoPro. I have it on my phone. I have posted the video. They are open about it. The reason it's a pro-Hamas protest is because the people at the protest were openly cheering Hamas. I mean, I don't know how more obvious you have to get, Ethan. Do you? You and I usually disagree on some of the nuance when it comes to how a group defines itself. But you and I are both very in agreement here, from libertarian over to conservative, that the group openly saying they're for Hamas is openly for Hamas.
Now, I understand you also had some curiously hypocritical campus leftist, you know, the purple haired soy types that were making their support known for Hamas. But also, what was it, the LGBTQ alphabet soup for Hamas, for pro-Palestinian? They were making an appearance at this rally as well, as I understand it.
Yeah, they were about one out of two. So half the crowd were individuals who ethnically look as though they supported Palestine because they were of Arab descent. So individuals who phonetically looked Arab, or excuse me, phenotypically looked Arab. And then the other group that was there was very pasty white, very short hair, pro-Marxist type, a lot of individuals who
Except
were wearing
rings.
Like pro-lesbian and also pro-pride flag symbology on their shirts and on little pins on their collars. Which is, I guess, irony really isn't a strong enough word at this point, knowing that any of those individuals who were pro-LGBTQ, the second they stepped foot into Gaza, would be killed without trial and hung from a crane. There is no trial. If you're accused of homosexuality in Gaza, you are instantly put to death. The accusation is enough to kill you. Not being convicted of homosexuality or bisexuality or pansexuality or super-duper unicorn sexuality, but just the accusation of engaging in anything related to LGBTQ plus 2IA 765309, Jenny, call my number. All of that is enough to instantly put you to death. And yet they're out there rallying. These people, they just want what you and I want. Despite, again, the people of Hamas very openly say, no, we don't want that. We want to kill Jews. As one leader of Palestine said on Russian television openly just a few days ago, the Israelis love life. The Jews love life. We love death, and we will give it to them.
It would be like the Jews supporting Hitler. I mean, irony doesn't begin to define it. Actually, though, I've had a soundbite that I think does begin to approach a definition.
Mental illness is a political identity and always has been.
There you go. When you're supporting the people who would literally murder you and hang your body from a crane, that is mentally deranged.
And this is the catch, really, quite honestly. We have devalued the word Nazi so much in the last 8 to 16 years that it no longer has any effective meaning. It no longer does, because these are genuine, actual, literal fascist Nazis who worship Adolf Hitler, who openly display the swastika on their phones at pro-Palestinian, pro-Hamas rallies. There were individuals who were walking up the streets in Indianapolis, up to Monument Circle when the protest was beginning, who were doing the Nazi salute as they marched. The genuine, honest-to-God Nazis, but that word doesn't mean anything anymore. It doesn't mean anything anymore. And again, everyone's talking about how Israel needs to show incredible restraint when fighting Palestine, when fighting in Gaza. Oh, we have to be very careful. I don't remember anyone sharing any concerns over how the Allies bombed Europe when the Nazis were in control. I don't remember anyone sharing any issues over the United States taking island after island in Japan, or the Soviet Union taking Berlin, or the Soviet Union taking the northern islands of Japan. But all of a sudden, even though there are real Nazis here that are using babies as human shields, all of a sudden we have to show exceptional consideration because, well, there's both sides, as though there's both sides to genuine, honest-to-God, actual anti-Semitic Jew hatred.
Well, I don't think we have to show consideration. Certainly, I think both of you and I are on the same page that what they've expressed is absolutely disgusting. However, I would be curious to get your opinion on what Jefferson Shreve stated from his Twitter before the rally took place, when he said, "As mayor, I would do everything in my power to stop a group with this vile outlook from assembling on property dedicated to Americans who have died for our country. I call on Hoosiers not to attend this rally celebrating brutality." That portion I agree with, but preventing the peaceful assembly of protesters, even in an ideology that I find to be abhorrent and hate, I think it is protected First Amendment speech. I think that it is valuable to protect that demonstration, even though what they are supporting is unequivocally disgusting.
As usual, Shreve has no idea what laws are for. I mean, this is day 905. Jefferson Shreve has no idea how the Constitution works, has no idea what the freedom of assembly is, has no idea what the Second Amendment is, has no idea that it's a misdemeanor to tell people that you're not going to enforce state law while you're mayor. That's regarding his abortion issues. Shreve has no idea what he's doing. No, I want them to host the rallies if people believe that, and here's why. Because when I record people with a GoPro who attended the rally, I want their employers, I want people in their communities to see them at the rally, because a rally is a public expression of a political opinion. That is you staking your personal reputation in public, saying, "Hi, I am John Appleby. I am out here in public, and I am telling everyone this is what I believe," because I want everyone in Indiana to see exactly what that filth that's walking on the circle is, so their employers and their people in their community can see exactly who they are. That's what a rally's for. So embrace. I want to see it out on the circle, because I also want the community to see the pro-Israeli people, the pro-Jewish people that showed up carrying Israel flags and American flags, who were praying and singing songs up on the steps of Monument Circle. That is a far better depiction of the state of Indiana than any of the filth that showed up on the rim.
This is why it's imperative to protect the free exchange of ideas, because democracy dies in darkness, and it's far better to have these sides represented so we can have their cards on the table and make our decisions from there. And I think one side in particular, with the beheading of children, raping of women, and brutalization of entire families, has made their side very clear and very disgusting. It's easy to pick who's the villains here.
Absolutely. And I'd like to take just a quick moment to express my thankfulness that there were no attacks on Indiana synagogues that we know of, no attacks on any Indiana Jewish families that we know of during that International Day of Super Rage, Jihad, whatever, because every single person in the state knows that there are freedom-loving Hoosiers who would be ready to dispense hot lead to anyone who would dare attack a synagogue after these horrific events in this state.
Very well summed up. I mean, behind every blade of grass, a firearm.
God bless America.
You're listening to 93 WIBC Saturday Night on the Circle. Tony Kinnett, as always, thanks for your insight. Thanks for coming on the show.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And stay tuned for more 93 WIBC.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Saturday Night on the Circle podcast. Be sure to catch us live every Saturday night from 7 to 9 Eastern on 93 WIBC Indianapolis, and watch us on the YouTube live stream where you can comment live with other fans.
I'm afraid explosives the only answer. It's the opinion of the entire staff that Dexter is criminally insane.
You're listening to Saturday Night on the Circle on 93 WIBC.
That boy needs
Therapy.
You'll also hear a startling assertion made from the minuscule mind of Ibram Kendi in this new documentary out on ESPN. You'll hear it all for this week's edition of Hat Tricks with Hatcher.
It's time for another one of Hatcher's Hat Tricks.
The story you are about to see is true. The names have been changed to protect the innocent.
Saturday Night on the Circle on 93 WIBC. Producer Gary on the board and helping the show function. All right, lots to get into. I knew we weren't going to have time in the first segment to delve into all of the administration and competency as it relates to the conflict between the Israelis and Hamas. So wanted to get into that in this segment. But first, of course, also forgot about Columbus Day this past Monday, although I definitely was reminded when I tried to go to the bank and they were closed. Surprise, surprise. Now, I say Columbus Day, not Indigenous Peoples Day, because like Tony Soprano, Columbus is a hero around here.
He discovered America is what he did. He was a brave Italian explorer. And in this house, Christopher Columbus is a hero. End of story.
Now, whether or not Columbus committed quote-unquote war crimes or crimes against humanity, you know, in his conquest of the natives for the island he invaded, I think is a less interesting question than why Christopher Columbus in particular rose to prominence in the American tapestry. And it more has to relate with his representation with the Italian people who were seeking to find connection with the founding of America. And so, in essence, by trying to whitewash Columbus Day, that's...
You know what it is? I'll tell you what it is. It's anti-Italian discrimination.
That's what we have to say about that. That's right, Sil. Anyway, wanted to get into the administration incompetency. Of course, Iran recently having been given $6 billion by the administration likely has a lot to do with the instigated attack from Hamas on Israel, because they are long supporters of Hamas. Something that the administration said they knew.
Does the U.S. believe Iran needs to pay some kind of a price, or be some kind of retribution for having supported Hamas all along up to this point?
Kirby!
Not there in dreamland!
Kirby!
Not there in dreamland!
I mean, the question almost, and I'm not picking on you, Ed, but it implies that that we're just now waking up to the fact that they've been supporting Hamas and Hezbollah and other terrorist networks.
What? Am I evil? Am I an evil person?
Oh, my God. I mean, absolutely. Do I not tell you that enough? You are, like, the most evil guy I know, man.
That's unacceptable. They knew that Iran supports Hamas. Hamas attacks Israel, and by giving them $6 billion, it would imperil the lives of Israelis.
Oh, well, I don't mean to pick on you there, Ed, but we knew that Iran was supporting Hamas, so we knew that was going to happen.
That's even worse. That's even worse. That makes them complicit in this atrocity. And John Kirby didn't end there. He admitted twice that the administration fully understood supporting Iran meant supporting Hamas.
Kirby!
Nightmare in Dreamland!
Kirby!
Nightmare in Dreamland!
We're looking hard at the intel stream, as you might expect that we are. And even as you and I are speaking here, Martha, we just haven't seen any specific tangible intelligence that leads us to the conclusion that the regime in Tehran was witting a resourced participant in these specific attacks. But I also want to make it clear that we absolutely believe in the broad complicity of Iran here.
What's the difference, John? Without
Iran, there would be no Hamas, there would be no Hezbollah. We understand that.
Hypocrisy is the Vaseline of political intercourse. They didn't like what they saw, so they changed it to make it sound better. Just like in these personal ads. It sounds great, but it's all lies.
It's not a bug, ladies and gentlemen. It's a feature. It's not a mistake that we gave $6 billion to Iran and they support Hamas, and lo and behold, there's an attack on Israel. We understood that was coming. Without Iran, John Kirby said there would be no Hamas, but they gave him $6 billion anyway, and other flunkies of the administration, Anthony Blinken, Secretary of State, he is saying that the $6 billion, it's being used for humanitarian purposes only, and they haven't even touched it yet.
Hey, Blinken.
Did you say Abe Lincoln?
No, I say Abe Lincoln. I said, hey, Blinken. Hold the reins, man.
When it comes to $6 billion, it's important to be very clear because, unfortunately, some people are either misinformed or they're misinforming. The money in question, Iranian money, not American taxpayer dollars, is money that was allowed to accrue in a bank account from the sale of Iranian oil. What we did is we moved the money from one account in South Korea to another account in Qatar where the money could actually be used, but under the supervision of our Treasury Department, only for humanitarian purposes, and not a dollar of that money has been spent to date. And we retain the right to freeze that account.
You're a liar. You're a liar. You know something that you're not telling us, you slimy scumbag liar.
They're only using it for humanitarian purposes, he says. Okay, so producer Carl, I've got an example for you. Now follow me here. Let's say that I want to buy lots and lots of cocaine for myself and friends to have a big party. You understand?
Yeah, like Hunter.
Dr. Roxo, the rock and roll clown. I do cocaine.
But oh no, I have to spend my money on phone and internet service, utilities, and mortgages, so now I don't have the cash for lots of Colombian booger sugar to entertain myself and my guests. Darn! But wait! Now the government decides to step in and they're giving me money that I can use to pay for my phone and internet service, utilities, and mortgages. So what, producer Carl, do you think I'm going to have the leftover money for?
To do bad things.
Right! For the cocaine! So that's analogous here. They're giving Iran the money that they're using on humanitarian purposes, which frees up the money for war crimes.
Well, and here's the bigger thing. He even admits we have the ability to freeze it, and notice that they're not
freezing it. Right. No, well, John Kirby just told you that the administration understood supporting Iran means supporting Hamas. So you can only conclude that they must have sanctioned this on some level. They just wished it would have happened during a Republican administration. Ah, no, the fallout. Ah, the consequences of my actions. No. Oh, it's absolutely ridiculous. But yes, incompetency on every level. We're continuing to talk about the fallout between the administration in the Israeli-Hamas conflict, and we're going to continue covering that coming up in the next hour. But before we brought an end to this segment, I wanted to put
liberal hypocrisy on full display. This is a new documentary from Brainchild, Ibram Kendi, playing on ESPN, in which he equivocates athletes to the new slave class.
It's almost like the contracts, you know, are the new slave chains, right? So, you know, you have to sign this contract and sign this document and sign this document. It's like you're binded to this. And then if you break that, that's your livelihood, that's your life. So we the new slaves. Athletes are literally the new slaves because we need this. Our families, our friends depend on this contract to eat.
Yeah. I think I can smell shite. Yes, I can definitely smell shite.
All right, a couple of things there I want to address. Point number one, contracts are not the new chains. It's not the new slavery. And if imagine for a moment those lucrative contracts were favored upon unqualified and untalented white athletic players, imagine the complaints that would go up. Rightfully so. I would question that arrangement as well. So, no, you're not being victimized here. You're actually being heavily rewarded for the athletic talents that you have. And then second of all, I don't give a damn if your friends starve. If you want to use your money and your contract to feed your friends, that's between you and your bank account. It's not my problem if you need to support your like family, okay, maybe not extended family, but again, that's a personal choice. So no, the contracts do not need to be more lucrative so you can support your family, your friends, and, you know, have a little extra walking around money on top of it. That's absolutely insane. But Kamala Harris also talking about DEI policy, because let's face it, without it, she wouldn't have been appointed vice president, a point which she acknowledged.
There are some forces in our country that are trying to say that it is a bad term to talk about DEI. They're trying to do with DEI what they did with woke. And we got to pay attention to that. They're trying to suggest that it is somehow wrong to talk about DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion. That it is somehow wrong to talk about the fact that when you look at, for example, the fact that I'm the first woman of color to be vice president of the United States.
Yep.
There's nothing wrong with me. Maybe there's something wrong with the universe.
Am I so out of touch? No. It's the children who are wrong.
She's completely out of touch with how ordinary Americans view diversity, equity, and inclusion, because they see it for the worthless virtue signaling that it is. Unfortunately, producer Carl has let me run completely off the rails. I've gone way over in the segment, so we got to cut it short. Stay tuned for more on 93 WIBC.
I'm not just one of your many toys. You don't own me.
You're listening to Saturday Night on the Circle on 93 WIPC.
Welcome back, Indianapolis, to Saturday Night on the Circle. In this segment, I had intended to get into the antics of one Jada Pinkett Smith, who has once again completely emasculated her husband, poor Will, who has to put up with the ceaseless insanity of this nut job. But sadly, I don't have time to play the stinking clips. Producer Gary on the board doing a much better job than producer Carl, who's walking around waving his hands, flapping his gums, distracting everybody else, instead of pointing at the clock and keeping me on time, which is what he's supposed to do. And, you know, I ran way over. So now it's thrown off the balance of this segment and we've gone completely off the rails. Unfortunately, that's all the time that I have. I got to leave it there, but you need to stay tuned, because coming up in the next hour, we're going to continue to delve into the Israeli-Hamas conflict overseas, administration incompetency, and also get into a little bit of primary discussion and the current state of the Indianapolis mayoral's race. Don't miss the second hour coming up next.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Saturday Night on the Circle podcast. Be sure to catch us live every Saturday night from 7 to 9 Eastern on 93 WIBC Indianapolis and watch us on the YouTube live stream where you can comment live with other fans.
This is Saturday Night on the Circle on 93 WIBC.
Welcome back to Saturday Night on the Circle. I'm your host, Ethan Hatcher. Thanks for joining the show. Hour two of the program. If you've missed a moment of the discussion, you can always find my podcast uploaded to WIBC.com or SaturdayNightOnTheCircle.fireside.fm, my personal podcasting page. Producer Gary doing a great job on his first solo run on the show. We appreciate your hard work. And producer Carl, of course, is flying like a mother hen, just on the outskirts and making sure everything runs smoothly. Thanks for tuning into the show. Last hour, we discussed administration incompetency as it relates to the Israeli-Hamas conflict. To the shock of nobody, the administration caught with its pants down, unable to even begin evacuating Americans. They haven't the first clue as what to do. And meanwhile, it's also highlighting the danger presented by the disastrous open border policy of the Biden administration. As more refugees flee the country, it brings to attention the immigrants who have already been flagged. These individuals who have crossed the border since 2021, just between October of that year and 2023, we had SIAs, I believe that stands for significant immigrants. I can't remember what it stands for, but point is, these are people who the administration is keeping their eye on, people of interest, people with potential ties to terrorist organizations or other significant connections. And since October of 2021, from Syria, more than 500 migrants were flagged, more than 130 from Yemen, more than 650 from Iran, 120 from Iraq, 6,000 from Afghanistan, 164 from Lebanon, more than 3,000 from Egypt, 1,000 from Pakistan, 13,000 from Uzbekistan, and 30,000 migrants with potential ties to terrorist organizations from Turkey. Just in those 2 years alone, put to the side the fact that more immigrants will be crossing the border since the conflict with Israel has begun. This is potentially endangering Americans. It's a national security risk. And it once again highlights the incompetency of the administration, who in the week since the attack took place in Israel that killed more than 1,300 innocent civilians, the administration still doesn't know what they're going to do in 7 days to evacuate Americans. And they're still clinging to that desperate line that, they live there, so they probably just want to stay anyway. This is spokesman John Kirby, which, producer Carl, I don't know if you've caught the new stager for John Kirby that we're using.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Yeah, everybody needs their own little intro, their own stager, and Kirby has his own, but still maintaining more than a week later, or actually a week later, that you can get out using a commercial flight when the airport has been shut down.
Congressman Lawler just said on TV that they're expecting an announcement within 24 hours about an airlift to the U.S. citizens. Can you tell us anything about that?
I don't have any details for you on that. I would just tell you, Peter, that we're in State Department is in active touch with American citizens in Israel. Many of them, as you well know, are dual nationals, to try to make sure that A, we've got the connection, and B, that we know if they have any concerns, in the case that they want to leave. So we're in active conversations with Americans on the ground there, and we want to make sure right now there are still commercial carriers, not all, some, flying in and out of Ben Gurion every day. There are still now viable ground routes if you wanted to leave safely out of Israel. That is also an option to you. But neither of those options may necessarily be feasible or affordable.
Sad.
you're sad, sad.
Just take a commercial flight, or, you know, you can always get out on the ground, even though those options may not be feasible or affordable. Listen to this lunacy. He's speaking out of both sides of his mouth. This administration is in a full tailspin, and now this disaster may well endanger an already precarious reelection proposition for the bumbling executive, Joe Biden, because now, in addition to the pressures caused by his incompetent border policy and the conflict between Israel and Hamas that his weakness has instigated and invited in many ways. On top of it, now he's facing third-party pressure because RFK has gone nuclear. He's going to go third-party.
Now you want to get nuts? Come on, let's get nuts.
And he's been denounced by his siblings, RFK getting nuts. On Monday, several members of RFK's family denounced him, saying that it's dangerous to the country. Quote, "The decision of our brother Bobby to run as a third-party candidate against Joe Biden is dangerous to our country. Bobby might share the same name as our father, but he does not share the same values, vision, or judgment. We denounce his candidacy and believe it to be perilous for our country." It's true. He could be a spoiler candidate, producer Carl. I find this proposition to be really interesting.
I'm just wondering, when did the Kennedys turn into English royalty?
They've always been English royalty. They're the Camelot family. They brought Camelot to the White House. That's the Kennedys. So, of course, they're English royalty. Anyway, they're American royalty, too. But now Kennedy pulling the trigger, going nuclear on the third-party option, and I wonder if he's going to be the spoiler candidate. And that's kind of what I wanted to ask you, producer Carl, because this has happened a couple times now. You had the 94 Ross Perot. He was the spoiler candidate that got us Clinton. Ralph Nader spoiled Al Gore and got us George Bush. And then potentially you have this, who could spoil Joe Biden's reelection and ensure a Trump victory, because he's not going to peel off conservatives.
Well, anything to keep Biden out of the office is good for America.
Yeah. Okay, so yeah, I think this is hilarious, and he's also being denounced by his siblings. That's going to make for some awkward conversations come Thanksgiving, which is in just a couple weeks. You know, we denounced you. Now cut the turkey. Thanks for listening to Saturday Night on the Circle 93 WIBC. Now, Biden, in addition to not having a clue where to begin evacuating Americans who are caught in the conflict, more than two dozen Americans already losing their lives between Israel and Hamas. He also had a lid on press conferences on Monday, a full day, 24 hours after the attack had happened, still not able to formulate a response. But we found out the reason why, because he was embroiled in his own scandal, you see, because he was being interviewed in connection with by Robert Hur in connection with his own classified documents scandal, which never forget that Biden admitted on tape he's had these documents since 1974, been storing them in the garage.
I made voluntarily, no one's had to threaten to do anything. Voluntarily opened every single aperture I have with house offices, everything for them to come and look and spend hours searching my home, invited them. Nobody, and the best of my knowledge, the kinds of things they picked up are things that from 1974, and stray papers. There may be something else, I don't know.
You stole it! He stole it!
No, I didn't!
He took those papers from 1974 out of a skiff and kept them in his possession for the intervening decades. Now, you want to talk about a breach of national security. You want to talk about a breach of protocol and handling classified documents. I mean, what's good for the goose is good for the gander. If you're going to go after Donald Trump for these things, then you better go after Biden with the same level of ferocity. And it illustrates why Donald Trump and Joe Biden both make for inadequate
executives, because instead of being able to address the country, here's Biden embroiled in scandal, having to answer questions to a federal attorney because of mishandling classified documents. And doubtlessly, Donald Trump would be sidelined by an endless cavalcade of accusations and court appearances that may stymie his ability to act effectively as an executive. I think there are better candidates to support in the primary, but that's just me. And Joe Biden now more than ever is looking like a weak lame duck candidate with the problems in the Israeli conflict, the weakness caused by his dithering in foreign affairs, as well as the open border policy and the weak economy. All of these converging as pressures that make it unlikely for Joe Biden to succeed in his reelection bid. Time will tell, and we'll be here for every moment of it. Coming up next, we're going to invite onto the program Jason Hammer and talk about whether or not he's changed his mind regarding voting for a third-party candidate or a write-in candidate in the mayoral election here in Indianapolis. I've often felt the same way, although recent ads have left me hesitant. We'll discuss that coming up next. So,
hey guys, thanks for listening to the Saturday Night on the Circle podcast. Be sure to catch us live every Saturday night from 7 to 9 Eastern on 93 WIBC Indianapolis, and watch us on the YouTube live stream where you can comment live with other fans.
Stay tuned.
He's a real nowhere man sitting in his nowhere.
You're listening to Saturday Night on the Circle on 93 WIBC.
Hello and welcome back to Saturday Night on the Circle, where I'm Ethan Hatcher, your square peg in this round world. Don't miss the podcast uploaded to saturdaynightonthecircle.fireside.fm and wibc.com. Plus, you can always hop in the comments while we're streaming live on the YouTube machine. As Election Day approaches and early voting begins, the time for Marion County voters to make their decision is drawing short. Will the unpopular Democratic incumbent mayor retain his office, or will the underperforming underdog lookalike challenger succeed in his long shot bid to replace the city's executive? Here to break down the election of the century between a turd and a douche is the beer-loving, high-rolling, all-American son of Beach Grove and one half of the indomitable duo on the Hammer and Nigel show, the unforgettable Jason Hammer joins us in studio once again.
That's an amazing intro, and I feel like I should just keep talking at this point so you can catch your breath. Like, I've got nothing else to add to that, but I'm just trying to run out the clock so you can catch your breath a little bit after that awesome introduction.
I appreciate that, sir. A consummate professional, as always. So I wanted to take your temperature as a fellow Marion County resident and resident of the east side. You're on Beach Grove. Well, south side. I'm more on the east side of town. But residents of Marion County, I wanted to take your temperature on how you're feeling about the Jefferson Shreve bid for the mayor's office, and if he's done anything at this point to change your mind about voting for a write-in candidate.
So I will say, and I've said this on our program in the afternoon, I love the new ad campaign that Shreve has, where you're going after Joe Hogsett, where he's saying, I am responsible. I am the mayor. That is a great ad campaign. And had he been doing that, had Jefferson Shreve rolled out of the gate and went wild with that for a couple of months, I think we'd have a real ball game here. But instead, the first opportunity he got out of the primary, the very first thing was to pander to people, bite your own base in the backside, and blame law-abiding gun owners, people like myself, people that are listening to your show right now, for the problems in Indianapolis. That's tough to overcome for me.
Yes, I mean, I understand that he blew it out of the gate, but it's a very compelling ad. I have a clip of the ad that we can play.
I am responsible.
Murders are up 52%, and the odds of getting away with it are better than a coin flip. Only 35% of cases were solved last year.
I am responsible.
Boom. Roasted.
This is brilliant. Why didn't he lead out of the gate with that? But okay, look, I was getting ready to sort of feel bad about potentially writing in Abdul for mayor because, look, Hogsnot sucks. I'm sick of this city under his leadership. And, you know, was I really going to stand on principle and sacrifice my vote for, you know, as a protest vote for a write-in candidate? I almost, because of that ad, was getting ready to feel bad. But then he completely blew it with his response to the pro-Hamas protest.
protest on Monument Circle. Look, obviously the content of what they were saying is disgusting, but he shoots out this tweet, does Jefferson Shreve, where he says, I would do everything in my power to stop a group with this vile outlook from assembling on property dedicated to Americans who have died for our country. Look, you've completely lost me at this point because you don't understand the Second Amendment. You don't understand the First Amendment now. And on top of it, you don't understand the legislative purview of the city's executive office. Go use your money, take the millions of dollars, and go back to high school civics, my friend, because you've lost me at this point. Like, I, without a guilty conscience, will definitely be writing in a third-party candidate or a write-in candidate because I just can't support Jefferson Shreve. I don't like what Joe Hogsnot is doing, but I can't support a candidate who doesn't understand simple constitutional values like the First and Second Amendment both combined. Like, you might get one, but certainly not two.
And I'm willing to bet that you've received some pushback, like I have, from some people that listen to WIBC saying, are you on the take for Hogsett? Have you done a 180? Let me make this perfectly clear. Nobody in this city hates Joe Hogsett more than I do. I cannot stand that man for what he has done to this city where I live, my parents live, and my children live. And he's beatable. He's vulnerable. And this is what really breaks my heart is I was all ready to be all in on Jefferson Shreve.
Yeah.
I was excited because here's a guy with money.
Yeah.
And if you got money, you can have a seat at the table and at least make this a competitive race. And throughout the primary, we thought, okay, maybe this is going to be something to keep an eye on. But the very first thing he did was listen to these god-awful political advisors of his that told him, crap on your base and try to pick up a few Democrats. I understand the process of trying to pick up a few Democrats. You can't win in Marion County as a Republican without picking up a few Democrats. But all he had to say, all he had to do, Ethan, was come out and go, my opponent's plan for guns and abortion is beyond his purview. He cannot do anything about it. And if he's not smart enough to understand that that's not a mayor's responsibility, he doesn't need to be in office. But instead, he said, well, hot damn, he's right.
That's the baffling thing. From the Republican candidate to immediately come out of the gate and support the Democratic mayor's plan is ridiculous. I was willing to support Jefferson Shreve. Like, I supported Abdul during the primaries, but I wasn't going to have sour grapes about the fact that my candidate was defeated. I felt like many Republican voters do in WIBC land that it's important to coalesce around Republican leadership for the good of the city. But if you don't understand fundamental constitutional values, then we can't move forward here. And
one more thing on this, too. A message has to be sent to the Indiana Republicans, Marion County Republicans. These are not the candidates we want. We're tired of the Holcomb, Shreve, wishy-washy, might as well have a D next to your name Republicans. Because, and this is why I'm writing in a candidate and not voting for Jefferson Shreve, if Jefferson Shreve won this thing, get ready, Bal, because every single Republican candidate is going to be anti-gun, and they're going to take it further and further left just to try to get into the office.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%, and it's a shame that the incumbent Democratic mayor is allowed to get away with hogwash like this, you know, essentially gaslighting the voters, and everything's fine in Indianapolis.
Indianapolis. With Mayor Joe Hogsett, we've made real progress. Billions in new construction, unemployment at a historic low, 700 new police.
But this whole place sucks. That's right, it sucks.
Indianapolis is not doing well under Joe Hogsett.
Like, no.
How much, especially since you've been on the nuts and bolts side of radio, how much do you think he got paid promotions-wise to say that with a straight face? Because that was broadcast professionalism right there. Like, to be able to say that without immediately laughing, maybe they edited out the giggles in post. You
right,
know?
Right, right. Hey, listen, Joe Hogsett is running ads on this radio station.
Isn't that incredible?
I've had people give us crap for it. Like, listen, we will take his money and then we'll make fun of him. It's the best of both worlds.
Right. If you want to throw away your money, you are more than welcome to do so here. We need all the ad revenue.
I mean, let's be honest, people will hear his ad on this radio station because we all do incredibly well, but it's a bold strategy. Like, we live in a city right now where Joe Hogsett's advisors are telling him to spend money on WIBC, and Jefferson Shreve's advisors are saying, you know what, that Joe Hogsett guy's pretty awesome.
It doesn't make any sense, but I mean, I agree in the sense it's important
important to send a message to the Republican Party of Marion County that these are not the candidates that we expect nor deserve, because we deserve better conservative leadership in the city. And I circle back to the fact that the Republican candidate seemingly doesn't understand basic civics, the nuts and bolts of how the city's executive functions, or the constitutional conservative values of the party that he claims to be affiliated with.
If you are a Republican and you want to win in Marion County, you don't have to go out there and be Tucker Carlson, right? You can send the message out there, my job is to do the bare minimum so you don't notice me. I want to be a baseball umpire. If you know who I am, if you see me all the time, I'm probably doing a horrible job. I want to make sure our roads are good, your trash is picked up. I want to keep business and conventions coming, and I want to keep the city safe. If anybody has a problem with that, let me know.
And that's the criticism of Photo Op Joe, because he's in front of the camera more often than he's behind the executive's desk. The city's executive is a fairly simple operation to run. You got the roads, you got the lights, you got the city police, and you got city transportation. It's a fairly small number. Oh, and of course, refuse, garbage collection.
Yes.
Small number of responsibilities.
I didn't hear activist in there anywhere.
No, shocker, right? So it's disappointing that we've essentially bought at least four more years of Indianapolis decline with a likely Hogsett victory. I don't think...
I know you're a guy that gets into history. Years from now, like the history books on the long storied, you know, history of the city of Indianapolis are going to say that only a few mayors had three terms. Joe Hogsett was one of them. But you said it earlier, straight from the South Park episode, he only won this time around because our choices were a giant douche and a turd sandwich. That's it. That's it, baby, right there.
But on the other hand, he's setting up the eventual next Republican mayor for a rise to glory, much like Bill Hudnut. Remember, he took India no place to India show place and made Indianapolis the city it is today after the decline of Joe Hogsett that will be regarded in the history books as prominent and pronounced. He's just setting up the next leader to make Indianapolis what it was in 2015, not that long ago. It's crazy how time flies in only 8 years, getting ready to be nine.
And you look at a city like Boston, and we talked with Reverend Charles Harris about this recently. A city like Boston is under triple figures in homicides. In Indianapolis, 200 has become the norm. It's become the norm for us to outpace Chicago in homicides per capita here. But yet we keep electing the same jagoffs back to office. Ryan Mears, Joe Hogsett, the gruesome twosome.
The prosecutor's office has come under criticism. The sheriff's department has come under criticism. And the Marion County judicial system has come under criticism.
And that's Republicans and Democrats,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, on both sides. Because all of them are failing this city. And it's just a shame that Jefferson Shreve isn't holding the city's leadership to the account he could with the enormous piles of money he has behind him. But evidently he doesn't understand.
Real quick, I know we got to hit a break here,
right.
But do you think this is Jefferson Shreve's planning, or is he getting bad advice from his political staff?
He's getting bad advice from his political staff. I can't remember the gentleman's name, but the same individual who ran the Lugar campaign into the ground on the same issue, alienating his Second Amendment base. And it's incredible that you have done this to not one, but two Republican candidates. Like, nobody should ever pay you money for political consultation again, unless it's for a Democrat.
You lost with Lugar in Indiana.
How?
Sweet mother of God.
How bad do you have to be at your job? Jason, thanks for coming in and talking about the pitiful state of the mayor's race. I'm really disappointed, but that's the cards were dealt. I'll be watching the mayor's debate coming up here in a couple weeks.
I will too. Do you think anybody's going to have hair on their peaches to ask Joe where he was for the riots?
I hope the moderator does. I'm not sure whether the Republican challenger will. Thanks for listening to Saturday Night on the Circle. 93 WIBC. More on the way.
Baby, don't you forget about me. Don't you.
This is Saturday Night on the Circle on 93 WIBC.
Welcome back to Saturday Night on the Circle.
We're just wrapping things up on the show. We had a lot to discuss, mostly relating to administration competency and how they've handled the Israeli-Hamas conflict. But I also wanted to talk about something which is making the rounds on social media, a bit of a cultural conversation, a moment of hilarity caught on tape when John Fetterman admitted the quiet part out loud that America, they're just not sending their best to Washington, D.C.
You all should need to know that America is not sending their best and brightest, you know, to Washington, D.C. Yes. Sometimes you literally just can't believe, like, you know, these people are making the decisions that are, you know, determining the government here. It's actually scary.
I'm going to be honest with you. I hate this place, this zoo, this prison, this reality, whatever you want to call it. I can't stand it any longer.
Like, it's got to be some kind of cosmic joke that they're trotting out John Fetterman to make that statement on national TV. Like, he knows, right? He's got to know. Of course they're not sending their best and brightest to Washington, because they sent you. They sent you to the Senate. They had to change the whole dress code around to accommodate your cargo shorts and hoodie-wearing ass to the Senate floor, only to be rightfully lampooned by the American people and have to switch it back. So, yeah, John Fetterman, obviously not the best and brightest, and there are many reasons to criticize him as a candidate, what he represents, the policies he supports, the manner in which he was elected to office. However, Carl, I hate to admit it, but this appearance gave me a little bit of pause that maybe leaning so hard into his health problems isn't such a great idea. It may backfire and, in fact, be playing into the hands of Democrats. I know it's fair to criticize. However, let's just play some other elements from this, some other clips from this appearance on the Colbert Show, which I have to say, and I'm so shocked, they were nothing less than charming. Sorry, I was puking off microphone there, much like Nigel, because the idea is so nauseating to me. But yes, John Fetterman was charming on his appearance with Stephen Colbert, especially when it came to discussing his health problems, and he talked about when he had the stroke.
Well, I was actually on my way to a campaign event, mm-hmm. and I was walking into a Sheetz. Anyone, Wawa, Sheetz, you know? Yeah, anyone, yeah. And I'm a Sheetz guy, you know, but at any rate, I was walking out of a bathroom in Sheetz, and my wife, Giselle, was like, oh my God, you're having a stroke. And I'm like, what are you talking about? I feel fine. And there was some tail signs that my face was drooping a little bit, and you got to get to the hospital. And I was like, no, I got to get to this event. You know, the primary is like a couple days ago. And they insisted we go into the hospital, and that stroke nearly claimed my life. And, you know, nearly dying is a major downer. And I'm so grateful to be here with you again. So, yeah.
Well, happy to have you here, too. Glad you can make it, shall we say.
Okay, and this does bring up a very valid criticism of his family members, because right there he told you very nearly, he was at death's door, very near to death's door, almost died as a result of this stroke, and they kept him on the campaign trail anyway. They put him forward anyway. They insisted on shoving him out on stage to do the debate anyway. So that is incredibly heartless of his family members, who should feel ashamed of themselves. However, how many Americans have had family members who've had strokes, who have had health problems, who have then subsequently overcome them, because you can recover from a stroke? And he talked about dealing with those auditory processing issues and then relying on closed captioning to help him interact with others.
Explain to the audience, what's the technology we're using right here for this interview?
Yeah, I am. I'm so grateful that after the stroke, I had some lingering processing auditory issues. Yeah. And now sometimes I use this captioning. And that is nothing different than having glasses like you have. Yeah. So I absolutely can process everything, but sometimes the language get kind of lost in translation. So I use this when I'm able to interact. And it really made me a fully more empathetic person. And I never thought about captioning before I had the stroke. And now I realize I have to be an advocate for anyone with a disability to have the kind of technology that allows them to fully participate in society.
Well, I can see how being more empathetic might make you a better senator.
So maybe it's not so good to lean into his health problems in particular. And I want to read a few of the comments on YouTube, top comments for the video where he made this appearance on The Late Show with Stephen Colbert. Quote, I was born with an auditory processing disorder and never knew help existed. Thanks for advocating for those of us with disadvantages, because so many people treat us like garbage and we are somehow and that we somehow deserve to be broken. I put in 15 years in healthcare before my body gave out, but that doesn't matter to anyone who looks at me. Another one. John Fetterman is like if unions were a person. He should run for president. The only congressman that actually dresses for work, not BS. Another one. As someone with lifelong mental health issues, I applaud Senator Fetterman for his transparency and his treatment and illness. Like, there are very few negative comments about this guy and his battle with health problems. And you can hear he's starting to sound a lot more coherent. He's starting to sound a lot more steady. And strokes are not permanent disabilities. They are something that you can that can be treated, that you can recover from, that you can do to help repair the damage. And in so doing, be an inspiration to others. And he also didn't shirk or didn't try to push off criticisms of his health. In fact, he took it on with great gusto and admitted it's part of the job.
How does it feel to have your private health become public news?
You signed up for that gig, and that's part of it.
Yeah.
And now, you know, the better I get, the sad, you know, Fox News becomes, because they love every every word I miss was like candy for Fox News, you know. And now now they even started thinking that some people, now there's a conspiracy that I have a body double now, you know.
Yes. And this is it's right here. It's in Forbes. Conspiracy theorists go viral with claims Senator John Fetterman actually body double.
I tell the truth. It's like I'm actually the body double, and John's at home going to be watching this, you know.
Oh, yeah. Good. So we, all right.
Okay, so producer Carl, it's your responsibility. I need you to smack me if I'm off base here. But was John Fetterman anything less than absolutely charming in his exchange?
Surprisingly coherent, which makes me believe that was a double.
Right. Well, you know, he's at home watching the Colbert Show, but. Like, every question he handled with dignity in responding to, you know, talking about the healthcare issue, in acknowledging that it is a valid criticism for others to make and one that he will overcome. It just makes me think that maybe this whole criticism as health in particular is backfiring. It's playing into the Democrats' hands. There are plenty of valid reasons to criticize this guy outside of his health problems, because he does support disastrous policies. He's definitely not the best and brightest. He himself was supported by his parents before he decided to get a real job in his 40s. So, no, like, John Fetterman is not the best representation for Pennsylvania. But you can't deny that the story of an individual overcoming their health problems to become a success and a senator is kind of an inspirational story, and one that he seems to be riding to the top. I can't help but feel that maybe this is foreshadowing things to come if Fox News and other conservatives continue leaning in to his health failings.
Well, I was going to say that we're still like 4 years from now. As long as the Republicans don't pick another Dr. Oz, I think the Republicans probably have a good chance of beating Fetterman.
One would hope, because there's a lot of reason to criticize John Fetterman, and surely the Pennsylvania Republican Party can burp up a better candidate than Dr. Oz, who was from New Jersey. Anyway, thanks for listening to the show. We've got one more segment on the way, a sad goodbye that you don't want to miss. So stay tuned to Saturday Night on the Circle.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Saturday Night on the Circle podcast. Be sure to catch us live every Saturday night from 7 to 9 Eastern on 93 WIBC Indianapolis, and watch us on the YouTube live stream where you can comment live with other fans.
is Saturday Night on the Circle on 93 WIBC.
Welcome back to Saturday Night on the Circle, final segment of the show, which is a bit of a downer for me because, unfortunately, this is the segment where we have to say goodbye to our good friend, Producer Carl. I hate to see him go, but he's moving on to greener pastures. Producer Carl, the final segment on Saturday Night on the Circle. Tell us where you're going, Producer Carl.
Well, it's funny that you say greener pastures, home and garden.
Well, yeah, you can get the fertilizer at Sullivan Hardware.
While I love doing this show, my wife is not a fan of working Saturday nights.
I don't blame her. We take up a lot of your time, Producer Carl.
Yeah, she'd rather have me home
especially on a Saturday night.
But yeah.
You've spent so much time here on the show and helped the show grow in a lot of ways. I appreciate the things that you've done to support the excellence that is Saturday night broadcasting. And it's going to be a total... gone through several different producers, but I think you might be my favorite producer.
Wow, that's quite a compliment.
Yeah, well,
really, I mean, good producers have come through here.
Producer Zach, Producer Donnie. I mean, you know, we've had a few.
Well, I expect to come back when Gary is out, so it's not a complete goodbye.
Right, you're not going to a different station.
No.
You're going to stay here in the WIBC family.
Correct.
But for the purposes of Saturday evening, it's going to be bereft of Producer Carl, and that's just depressing.
Well, thank you.
I'm excited that you're going to have the opportunity to work with different hosts, though. Like, that's going to be cool.
Yeah, so I look forward to seeing you sometime during the week when you're subbing. So.
Right.
Bring back the band.
Which I will be subbing this Tuesday, filling in for Rob on the Kendall and Casey show. But you're not gonna be producing quite that quick.
No, not that quick. I'll make my appearance quietly. Just don't know when.
So yeah, Producer Carl, you've been the best. I appreciate your run here on Saturday Night on the Circle, and now I look forward to Producer Gary, who's beep 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 pushing the buttons and doing the things Producer Carl used to do. Appreciate you, Carl.
Thank you.
All right, that is the end of the broadcast. Unfortunately, all the time we have, I leave you with my parting words of wisdom. As always, wherever you are, whoever you're with, whatever you're doing, remember that life is a state of mind. And I'll see you next week.